You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. 2-year-old thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th, cheated 11th dimension chess right here, maybe.
Yeah, cheated
impressed.
A little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. Sitting next to me, as always, Dave Goss. Out there in the octagon, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. And boys, crisis has been averted. There was a doomsday scenario, sort of, for the U.S. men's national team. And we talked a lot about it on the last show with Taylor Twellman. We wondered a lot about what would happen. Most people said, stop worrying. The U.S. is going to wax them and then go to the World Cup, or at least go to the hex for sure. And it happened. U.S. beat Guatemala 4-0. We'll talk about that in just a second. We'll talk about Canada once again. Had a little bit of a tough time with Mexico, as will happen. And then the U.S. U-23s. Tough one for them. They will not be going to Rio. They lose in Frisco 2-1. Colombia headed to the Olympics. But first, you're learning Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just call me on that. Me and a bird named Duo.
Yeah, Duo. You and Duo, Duolingo, doing your thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're ready to be dropped down into the wilds of Guatemala for the next qualifier?
Yes, I do. If only every word that's spoken, there's like a translate. Like I need subtitles in human form at all times.
Because
like
I need form. What
I'm sorry. Like I need
about?
Subtitles in the real world, and I need options of what the translations could be.
Yeah.
With those two things. And only conversations being held to where are the children? Do the children drink water? Do the cats drink water? And Papa's Fritas. If that's the conversation realm.
So you need life and language to be multi-choice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uno cerveza, por favor.
I knew that word before.
¿Dónde están los baños? Hey, do you know any other?
¿Dónde el pescadito?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Nowhere in this game. Although he was there. He was jostling people doing what pescadito does. Let's talk about the game. A big win. This really is what had to happen. This never should have gotten to this point. I think we've discussed that. We've beaten that one to the ground. So let's just jump right on the game. And the U.S. in a pretty good position here to get through away in this group. 7 points. TNT still on top with 10. Guatemala with 6. And poor St. Vincent and the Grenadines, they're not going to get a point, it seems, in this one. The U.S. is away to St. Vincent, and then they're home versus Trinidad and Tobago. It looks like they will get it done. Trinidad and Tobago host Guatemala. Then they come to the U.S., Guatemala. You can just figure it out here at Trinidad Tobago and then home versus St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Matt, your thoughts on the performance? I mean, the result is what it is. We needed it, but what was the performance like?
The intensity was good, which had been lacking for a long time. And I suspect a lot of the guys took it upon themselves. It reminded me a little bit in a way of the snow game back in 2013 after the Brian Strauss article had come out. It was a similar amount of urgency, which is what a lot of fans had looked for. In terms of the style, it was classic American soccer. It was, the first goal was off a long ball into the box and a knockdown. The second goal was off a set piece. And then the other two were just capitalizing on a couple of bad defensive bad turnovers from Guatemala. There was nothing new in this, and it's the way the U.S. should have been playing. And I think what you do is you say, okay, can we take what happened here and build upon it, build something a little bit more dynamic and a little bit more aesthetically pleasing by making one or two tiny substitutions? If we put Arlington Nagbe in for Graham Zusi, what does that do to us? Does this mean we can still be a high-pressure team that can kill you on these long balls, but also has the ability to create a little something out of possession as well? That's a question that I think Jurgen Klinsmann should have been asking for the last 5 years, and it's one he has completely failed to address. Maybe he changes his ways after this, but I somehow doubt that.
And for everyone out there, he doesn't mean Darlington Nagbe for the last 5 years. That was impossible.
Sorry.
Right. But I actually fully agree with everything Doyle said in that I really like the way they set up. I think playing Dempsey as a lone forward if you don't play with guys on his wings that are as aggressive, as physical, as athletic, and more of a striker mentality as Wood and Zardes, he ends up getting isolated and lonely, and you end up having a lone forward who's not a true number nine like that. And we've seen in some games when we've gone on the road to big teams where we have no opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of Zardes and Wood playing on those wings, quote unquote, off of him, where they can make a run. Pretty much any time the ball shifted to one side, the winger on the other side became the second forward. So when Zardes was out wide right, Bobby Wood would come in field and become another option. I liked that part of the setup. I obviously like the idea of playing an actual holding midfielder behind Michael Bradley. I think over the next few years, that position is going to become Jeff Cameron's if no one else steps up, because I think
Cameron... Wait. Why would it be Jeff Cameron's?
Because
he's a 30-year-old starting central defender. He's clearly the best defender in the pool.
Because you have other options at center back. You do not have a holding midfielder who can do the job defensively and pass out and help create. Because you talked about it. Having an ability that not just long balls, to be able to control the ball a little bit in possession. We've seen Jeff Cameron play there twice ever, and I thought they were two of the better performances in the last 5-6 years. There are a ton of other reasons that affect all these performances.
Well, just to give you the rundown here, Clint Dempsey did score the opening goal in this one, as you said. Jeff Cameron got that goal as well, and we're talking about him, you know, look, Cameron, right back, center defensive mid. At some point, I think Jurgen should just pick a position. I don't care between center back and center defensive mid. When John Brooks comes back, you'd expect him to compete for that spot as well. Matt Beisler out in this one for a concussion. Graham Zusi, his Sporting KC teammate, did get a goal in this one right after halftime, kind of shut the game down. A nice little poke home to the back post. Two goals here off of Giassi Zardes' touches that I'm not sure Giassi Zardes knew much about. But you know what? Surprisingly effective in that sense. You don't got to know about it as long as it works. That was some good stuff from them. Josie Altidore gets a goal in the 89th, which was good. And Ethan Finley at home in Columbus. That goal is not offsides. And he even goes with the knee slide and has to get it called back. I mean, I felt for the kid.
No, brutal callback. And, you know, that was the moment that as a young, you know, he gets to do it at home, finally score, and he got killed. Two things I want to look at, though, are one is, and Doyle, I'd like to know what you think, Steve Birnbaum. I mean, this was, what, his second start ever for the U.S. national team thrown into it? He started and got – or no, he didn't start. He got the two goals in the friendly in January. I thought he looked comfortable. I thought he looked good. He seems like the type of guy that maybe with the step up in opposition but also the step up in quality around him, he can fit in very well, which I think is an asset that works really well with this national team. And that's one of the reasons why I'm saying Beisler, Birnbaum, John Anthony Brooks, Omar Gonzalez, I think you have some decent options in center back as long as you play them as center backs.
You're basing this off of 90 minutes against Guatemala. You know, like, Guatemala is a really bad team. That's, you know, they that was not a test to base some sort of long-term lineup decision upon. What I think you base it upon is Jeff Cameron's ability to crack a game open with his passing from central defense, the fact that he plays there on a weekly basis in one of the best leagues in the world, and the fact that he's experienced that for the national team as well. I think Birnbaum does figure in to the depth chart, but play your best players in their best spots. And he's 30 years old. There is no longer any doubt that central defense is Jeff Cameron's best spot.
Edgar Castillo at left back. There have been some mixed reviews here. You guys have any feelings on that one? I mean, seems like a little bit of a problem spot. Not right now. For a while it has been.
Oh, it always is.
Yeah.
Fullback always is. My friend was texting me during the game and was like, we just can't find an answer. And then you watch the U23 game, which we're going to move on to, and you're playing Kellen Acosta at fullback, and you have five or six holding midfielders that you think you have there, and you can't find a fullback. Let's not talk about Castillo. I thought Yedlin looked comfortable. I thought so that's another fullback position. Yeah. Well, if you think that Fabian Johnson should be a fullback on this team, which different people feel different ways about that, I do not. But he could play both. You only need to find one at this point over the next 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. And if Yedlin can be that at right back, it would allow Johnson to play most of his minutes at left back. And that's
Johnson's not going to play fullback anymore. I think we've done that experiment to death. And
you sound so sure.
I don't know how you could be sure about anything.
That's a recipe for next game for you to just.
He's a starting winger on a Champions League team. It would be even by Jurgen standards, it would be nuts to bring him back to fullback when he's been such a liability there defensively. Go back to the World Cup and you look at the two crushing late goals. Both came down Fabian Johnson's side. So I don't think he factors in there anymore. I think you have to start looking. Look, I'm fine. Edgar Castillo is playing really well for Monterrey. I'm fine with him for now. Hopefully he continues it into Copa America this summer. I do want to bring up one canary in the coal mine. U.S. had 4 goals, which is great. Just 9 shots. That is not the type of output that you can sustainably score a lot of goals with. I think that it has to be addressed. I think, getting a guy like Darlington Nagby or maybe Lee Wynn, maybe even Christian Pulisic into a full-time creative role can help address it. I think the other thing is Bobby Wood is definitely not a winger. I think a true winger on that side would have helped more than Wood did in terms of chance creation. But at the end of the day, you take the 3 points and you breathe a sigh of relief, and you move into the summer.
I didn't know if we were gonna how far we would go without saying the name Christian Pulisic. I was like waiting to see who would say it. I wasn't gonna be the one to bring it up, but this is a big deal. Speaking of Champions League teams in Germany, Christian Pulisic is now a U.S. international. Tried and true, done. Cap tied. Got him in.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
I don't know anything about him. Not sure what you think of him.
Yeah. I respect the fact that you went with the Ian Dark pronunciation of the last name right there, maybe.
Oh, what's the is
he
there
wants
a
to be pronounced? He wants to be called Pulisic.
Pulisic.
Which is the Americanized version of pronouncing a human's own name, which you have the option to tell people the way
he can say
it should be pronounced. Ian Dark seems to think that he gets to decide because he's... Him and Taylor Twellman were going
Pulisic,
back and forth.
That's what you're saying?
Pulisic, I guess it would be the Croatian pronunciation most likely.
So he's not, there's no Chich.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to go by that.
Okay, I'm going to have to break some habits here, but that's okay. We'll figure it out. A big win for the United States in that sense.
If he can do anything that people think he's going to do, I think you'd be happy pronouncing his name any way he wants
to. Yeah, this is true. Let's move on to Canada. They had a big game. They went down to Azteca, and as teams do at Azteca, they lost 2-0. 4 points for Canada after 4 played. Mexico at the top of Group A and CONCACAF's 4th round with 12 points. They are just rolling along. 10 goals scored. No goals allowed. Honduras, 4 points as well. Big Boniat Garcia goal last Tuesday? Yeah, see, I'm just all screwed up with my dates right now. I'm just trying to figure all this stuff out. Canada,
it was 2 days ago.
Look, I'm screwed up. It's all I'm figuring it out. I'm trying to figure it out. Canada, they got Mexico fans to boo their own team, so that's something,
right? I think
right?
They were olaying the Canada team in the last
really?
Like 5 minutes as they knocked it around casually in the attacking third with no threat. I only watched the second half. Canada, and this isn't a surprise, this isn't a knock on them. A lot of people are like this when they go to the Azteca. They weren't really in the game. They had a few moments where they knocked it around the back line. Kyle Larin was very lonely in the times that I saw him touch the ball, but I didn't watch the first half.
That sounds a little too personal.
That he was so
very
lonely.
Well,
there was
very
one
dark time.
There was one where he got it up the right wing and he tried to turn, play it past the man at midfield and run onto it. And it was like, it just felt like there was so much green and Kyle Larin out there in front of 80,000 people. It just looked very lonely.
Where will I go? Where will I go? Oh, man. Well, this is not good. This is not good for Canada's Hex hopes. Doyle, have you given up hope for them? Do they have a chance? They go to San Pedro Sula, I think, next.
Yes.
I mean, like, that's no fun. We know all about San Pedro Sula. That's not a place where you're likely to get results, and Canada has a little bit of history, let's say.
You got to drive the stake into the heart of the demon in the place of the demon.
Yeah. You. I enjoyed that. I really liked that. Yeah, and look, what was it, 8-0?
Yeah.
The heartbreaker?
8-1.
8-1.
I have a little respect.
I just assumed that there wasn't the one because, look, it just was that soul-crushing. Do they have a chance? Can they do this?
They're good enough to get a draw. they're good enough to get a draw. I think a win would be surprising. Honduras still have more overall talent. But, look, I thought they were... I thought their qualification hopes were going to be done by now.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're sitting there on 4 points, same as Honduras. If they get 4 points from the last two, which they're entirely possible it's entirely possible for them to do that. Then Canada could be making a trip to the hex.
If they get a draw, they're in the driver's seat to get to the hex. If they get a draw at Honduras, Honduras then has to play Mexico, and they get to host El Salvador in the last game.
I was just going to say that.
It's not easy. Well,
yeah, no, that's what you're here for, right? I don't even know what day it is. I'm just
these games are on September 2nd, September 6th. I won't even try and help Weeby figure out what day of the week those are.
You
know, but it's not going to be easy. But they've struggled to score goals.
That's really
they
the
don't
issue.
Have to score goals when they go down to Honduras. They need to not concede them. So maybe that gives them that little bit of potential.
I think the hex would be a whole lot more fun with Canada in it. Yeah. I really do.
Especially the way they showed up in Vancouver for the...
Yeah, I mean, there would be something special and let's be honest, something a little bit different about it after the last few cycles. So here's hoping Canada...
Also, I bet you Jurgen Klinsmann won't miss a trip to San Pedro Sula if he can.
No, I'm sure he would be overjoyed to have to not mess around with that one. Let's talk about the U-23s. This is not good news as well. There is no tomorrow for them. They are not going to the Olympics for the second straight cycle in a row. They will not make that trip. This team just not good enough. Just simply not good enough. Colombia clearly the better team. Why the diamond as well in this game, I wonder. I mean, there's no real number 10, I don't think, on this team. There's not really. We've talked about like a striker that's going to kind of take things by the scruff of its neck and really put another team in danger and make them really think and worry. What should we take? Let's go big picture here. Not just about this team, Doyle, and you can mix that in as well, but big picture. Two times in a row, our youth national team's not really doing what most people hope they're doing would do. Where do we
start? I don't think it's for lack of talent. I think the last two groups have been actually pretty talented, and look, the 2012 team just choked. Their goalkeepers choked it away, and that was that. This team was not set up to... win. They, like you said, why the diamond? You need a genius number 10 to play the diamond. An Echeverry or a Javi Morales, or you know, if you want to go back to the teams that AC Milan played it with, it was Kaká. This team had Luis Gil in the first game, and they had Emerson Heinemann, who is a number 8 in the second game, and consequently they generated nothing. On the flip, I mean, in the knock-on effect of playing the diamond is you end up putting Jerome Kiesewetter, who has been the most consistent attacking threat at this age group, on the bench because he's a winger. Kyrie Shelton has no place because he's a winger. I just don't get it. I think it was a bad tactical game plan, and it was a really dogmatic approach. This team, this age group was built to play a low block 4-3-3 that hits in transition, and they were never given a chance to do that. And it's so disappointing. And it's the first time since the 1960s that the U.S. have missed two straight Olympic Games, and the people in charge need to be held accountable.
There was some real frustration on the field as well. I think Tim Parker pretty clearly should have been out of this game. He's played really, really well for this team. He's probably the best defender that they had. Excited to see what he does in Vancouver, and you know, really like him as a player, but you can't stomp on somebody.
No, I thought a lot of that stuff.
Obviously.
I thought a lot of that stuff was embarrassing. I thought, you know, I was on Twitter during the game and fans were complaining about diving and embellishment and whatever Alejandro Moreno had to say about it, but the U.S. performance was embarrassing from that point of view, on top of the fact that they played really poorly, on top of the fact that they set up really poorly and came out with a really negative mentality of we're going to defend this 1-1 draw or whatever it was.
A 2-1 loss this was. It was not a goal that the U.S. scored.
No.
It was just a shocking defensive error own goal. So it wasn't as if there was, you know, I can't even, I'm struggling
to think.
They didn't
have a shot on, yeah, they
I'm struggling
had two
to
shots
think
on goal?
Of a time, I don't think so.
No, zero shots on goal.
Yeah, right. I don't think so. I'm struggling to even think of a time in which Colombia was seriously threatened.
Yeah, there was the one Kellen Acosta chance at the end. He had a header that he put wide off but, a deflection or whatever.
But it
would have
had
you.
To be the finish of a lifetime for that to be in.
Right, I agree with you. And also, and I think they handled themselves poorly. First of all, if you want to be a U.S. national team player and you want to play in CONCACAF competition and CONCACAF Gold Cups, then you need to be able to handle yourself in high-pressure situations. You need to be able to handle yourself when the opposition The men's national team just played against Carlos Ruiz two games. You need to be able to handle yourself against players like that. Mm-hmm. You can't lose your mind every single time you think someone on the opposing team has embellished in any way or you think a call has gone against you. That's one side. The other thing is the comment that everyone's making is this is another lost generation. I don't understand that statement at all. So I don't know if any of you guys feel that way.
No, I mean, look, it's a lost opportunity for sure.
But like, yeah. It's a lost opportunity. You want to be in every competition you can be. But at 23 years old, if guys are going to make it, guys are already on their way to playing first-team soccer. Or they're playing with the full team.
Right.
And around the world, it's U20.
John Brooks, Yedlin, guys
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yep. Around the world, it's U20 qualifying to get into the Olympics. It's not a U23 team. It's, you know, they don't have U23 teams. And I think that I think that comment's a little bit overboard for mm-hmm. people. There are a lot of guys on this team that won't make the first national team because they're 23 years old and they're not on the way to do it.
That's just the way of the world. Yeah. That's the way it works at the youth levels. We will see who moves up. That really is the question now. Who has an opportunity to get up there and play with the big boys? Let us know what you think about anything that happened in this international break at Extra Time Radio. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, MLS is back, and that means we have plenty to talk about.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Don't want to see you cry, darling. No way.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Arm Tyrannos Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are into MLS, of course, back on the grind this weekend, and it starts on Friday, Red Bulls and Revs. Viernes de Football, 7 p.m. on Unimas. Before we jump into this game, though, guys, do you feel coming off international breaks, is it hard to get back in the swing of things, or do you have that kind of you have that fire in your belly that you just need MLS? It needs to be back.
I prefer massive amounts of soccer in my life, so I prefer quantity with quality over quality, though.
Oh, okay.
So I want to have soccer in front of my eyes at all times. So international breaks, I love international games, mm-hmm. but it does hurt a little bit. One thing I noticed while looking at stuff was I could not remember anything that happened 2 weeks ago. Like, I was looking at matchups, and I was trying to think, where does RSL stand right now? Where does Chicago – and I was like, has the season even started yet? And now I'm back in.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of a restart. It feels like for most teams that they're just figuring things out, that they're trying to find combinations, partnerships, just the right tactics. I mean, healthy players sometimes at this point. Doyle, not talking about specific teams, although I will grant you that you can jump in on them. How much do we really know about this league right now? Do most teams 3 games, some teams 4 games? Are we still stumbling around in the dark?
I think it's about 50-50. I think we have a good idea for a bunch of teams. I think we probably know better the defensive side of the ball. We know which teams are going to be good and compact and are going to be able to batten down the hatches when they need to. The offense almost always takes a little bit longer to come around, and I think that's what we start figuring out come April.
Unless you're the Houston Dynamo.
Yeah, if you're Houston, who knows? Who knows right now what's going on with them? They were scoring goals, and then they got knocked down a little bit. Let's start with Friday, though. As I said, Viernes de Football, the Revs and the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls with some serious injury concerns. I mean, you cannot overemphasize enough how snake bit? I don't know what, hamstring bit?
Well, okay. I don't want to go out on too far a limb here, but there
is
a concept.
Limb breaking. That's crumbling.
Listen, Ronald Zubar being injured shouldn't be a surprise. Damian Parnell came into this season hurt, right? So while you can say, yes, it's unfortunate, I don't know that snake bit is the right word because guys get hurt. That's a part of the game. When you have an injury-prone player that you're relying on and another guy who's already hurt, then, you're going to have to fill in at center back at some point before Damian Parnell's ready to come back. You've sold Matt Miazga, and this was kind of something coming. Carl Wiemet played time for them last year. I think they trust him in spots.
He's no nonsense.
Right.
He's a guy that's going to whoop the ball out of play when he needs to. He's not going to make any spectacular plays. That's okay, though. As you said, though, another big one for them missing is Gonzalo Verón. And, they got 4 goals in the last game. 2 of those reliant on Felipe heroics. I don't think you're going to see him replicate those sorts of plays every game. And 1, a really ugly goal that just kind of got knocked in by Grelladinho. Should New York be more concerned right now, Doyle, or New England? New England doesn't have a win. They've not won a game, and Kofi is suspended for this game.
Yeah, I think they're both probably about the same level, DEFCON 3 or so. I mean, I still think that New England have the pieces to be a really good team, and they just need to figure it out. And we've seen a couple slow starts from them in the past couple of years as well. They have a knack for just completely reversing their form seemingly overnight. With New York, I do worry more about the missing pieces. You know, Miazga, he was ideal for that team that wanted to play front foot soccer and you know, push way up and sort of identify themselves through the high pressure. And you don't find guys like that off the street. It's hard to replicate. And no Parnell means no organizing force. And suddenly you're kind of against the wall a little bit. And it's not even April. I mean, I don't think anybody should be in a panic on either side. But as we always see, there is definitely some stuff to figure out.
Quick question from Twitter, Nico Graves 9, and he asks, is a tie good enough for New England at home versus the Red Bulls on Friday?
I don't think so, actually. You come into this, you don't want to go 5 without a win. You're coming off the international break. The Red Bulls are absolutely torn up with injuries. I think you got to win the game. In front of your home fans, you got to win the game. You got to start to turn the season around. We'll see if it happens for them. This is a golden opportunity. They really need this one. Let's go to Saturday here. A lot of games. Things get started at 5 p.m. Eastern. Philly at the Fire. This one's on MLS Live. You know how to watch it. You know how to get it. Interesting one, guys, because it's two coaches playing against a former club. Obviously, Jim Curtin is a Philly guy, but he played for a long time with the Fire. And Veljko Paunovic, his only MLS experience was with the Union, so kind of switching sides, going at it from different directions. But, Doyle, I want to start you on Philly's midfield because this is a team on 6 points, the top of the Eastern Conference. I think there's always been this sense around Philadelphia of, like, why aren't they doing a little bit more? We want more. We need more. You saw that with some of the fan protests last year. Now you've got Ernie Stewart in there trying to work his magic. Vincent Nogueira and Tranquilo Barneta were out. Seems like they will be back. How does that change this team? How does it make them better? Because I can't imagine any way that it doesn't make them better.
Well, I'm not sure that they need to change. They just need to do what the guys who were in last week did. Just do the same thing. And it's all predicated on playing off of CJ Sapong and the space that he carves out up top. And you know you can play the ball to his feet and he's going to hold it up and he's going to connect useful passes and that draws the defense in and smart players are able to find that sort of space. And Nogueira and Barneta are good players and they can do some stuff. But last week, he had guys like Warren Cravalho hitting left-footed one-time through balls to carve open the defense. Like, that is what happens when you put a team of players with complementary skill sets on the field together. It worked really nicely for Philly, and I think it should continue no matter who's in the midfield.
How would you define this team's style? I know we're always, and I think coaches and players get a little bit upset at media folks for trying to really put teams in boxes.
You media folks.
I'm a terrible media folk. Is there a style that they're going for? I know we heard an awful lot about what they were going to do in a 4-3-3 and so on and so forth, but how are they being effective other than just playing off CJ? What does that mean?
Well, I think they're playing direct to him, and because he is so secure, they're able to throw their wingers forward early. If you look at a lot of teams in MLS, they have their wingers arrive to the play a little bit late, letting the center forward be the spearhead and stretch the defense out. I think Sporting KC is a good example of that. But with Philly, they have Sapong actually come back deep into midfield, and that allows the wingers to turn and go and find those gaps and get into open space. And it works. You need the right personnel around it, and they have that now with Sebastian Letou and Chris Pontius being healthy and you know, a few other guys who have played out wide. But it's not something a lot of MLS teams do, but it's something through, you know, 3 weeks Philly's proved really, really good at.
And it's something I think similar to what we saw with the national team with Zardes and Wood coming off the wings, where then so Sapong drops deep. They make the run off the wing. A guy like Nogueira will feed off that long ball over the top. Mm-hmm. And you have that pace or finishing ability with a guy like Chris Pontius, Elsino, and other names that Doyle said. that's a great threat as well, because it's not just the lone striker who's the target up front. It allows those wingers to make those runs behind center backs or across center backs that they can't mark. And I think it's a testament also to just solidifying a team and an identity in that, you know, they're going out on the field with an idea. All 11 guys have a comfort, I think, in what they're doing, what the ideas are. And you see some teams where things are chaotic, things are unsure. I think right now Seattle's one of those teams, maybe LA is one of those teams, where not everyone knows where their job fits in, like Doyle said, complementary pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to something that can be strong.
The key to that, of course, is that folks can't get injured. And a guy like CJ Sapong has got to stay healthy and productive, right, and at it. So we'll see what happens with Philly. We've talked a lot about the Union. We haven't said a word about the Fire. David Aucom didn't train yesterday. It's not good news for Fire fans. But this is a team, though, that's gotten two nice results in a row after kind of a helter-skelter 4-3. I mean, look, they're pretty good. You give me that.
Sorry, I'm making a face because me and Doyle watched the Crew Fire game.
Hey, I said good result. Right. I didn't say good performance. So where do they stand right now? Where does Panovic stand?
It's similar to what they did kind of last year, where it was like, we think we have some attacking pieces. We go out, we attack, we give up so many goals, then let's just shut the entire game down so we don't concede goals. They have to find a way to be defensively structured and sound while still having any sort of attacking opportunity.
Some sort of threat.
If you defend with 11 guys, yeah, you're going to be able to not concede goals. You have to be able to attack at the same time. And I think Gilberto's the biggest piece. I love David Aucom. I think he's fantastic. He's fun to watch. He's a great threat against the counter. He can score. But Gilberto's the linchpin for me that can create for his teammates, that can move defenders around a little bit and change the point of attack, change the point of play. And right now they don't have any of that.
The linchpin that the Rapids were kind of leaning on, or had been leaning on last year and starting to mix things up here, was Kevin Doyle, the international for Ireland. He will not be playing for a while. And if you haven't seen this photo, I would both recommend that you go out and check it out. And also don't do it, because it is jarring. It is very, very jarring. He's out for at least a couple weeks. It's looking like probably more like a month. He had reconstructive surgery. Is that what you would call it? He went to a plastic surgeon to get this thing fixed. I mean, it was like 4 inches to the bone. The tackle didn't even look that bad. And on Twitter, Doyle, and this is all ahead of TFC visiting, by the way, 8 p.m. on Saturday, MLS Live, just to remind you so you can set your night up. I put it out on Twitter that this was a big loss. And I had a bunch of people come back at me and say, no, it's not. That's not a big loss. He hasn't been that productive. This allows Gashi to move up top. I guess I just can't see a scenario in which losing a DP in depth is a good thing, but maybe you disagree.
No, I agree 100% with you. Gashi is not the type of guy who can battle with the likes of Drew Moore and Demian Perkey to carve out attacking space for everyone else. Kevin Doyle is. Kevin Doyle hasn't been a Golden Boot-esque type of player, but he has been productive in terms of just making the Rapids attack better. They're going to miss him, and they don't have anybody who can really replace that. Gashi is he's a poacher. He's an underneath forward anyway. He's not going to do the stuff that the Rapids have really needed Kevin Doyle to do.
And taking away that, I would assume Dominic Baggi's the one who's going to go up top.
Yeah, you would think so.
He'll give you a runner. He'll, you know, put at least a little bit of pressure on the back line in terms of, like, his speed. He'll pressure guys. I mean, obviously, you have Connor Doyle on the bench, which means if you throw number nine on
Doyles.
The back, if you throw number nine on the back of his jersey and run him out there with a Doyle, maybe the other team's like,
oh, Doyle rules.
Oh, right, Kevin Doyle's healthy. Forgot. Like, let's put focus.
Yeah,
on
him. I don't know. Connor's got a much more. He's much more trendy haircut.
It
probably
might get you 10 minutes of.
Of just confusion.
Of confusion. Confusion.
Here we go. I mean, Toronto FC, Drew Moore coming back, Clint Irwin coming back. Go check out MLSsoccer.com for a very interesting interview that we did with Clint Irwin. Pablo Maurer talked to him down in Florida. A lot of interesting things there. The presidential elections, what it's like to come up from the lower divisions. What's he thinking as far as what he'll do once he retires? Go check that one out. Watch this game. 8 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live, Jovinko, Josie, Michael Bradley, pretty good group there. 30 minutes after that one, you've got RSL visiting Sporting Kansas City, and this to me is a really, really juicy matchup, a juicy rivalry. I truly think it's a rivalry, but it's got a little bit of the luster taken away by the fact that Roger Espinoza and Kyle Beckerman are suspended for this one on red cards. If you don't remember, back in 2011 preseason, 2013 was MLS Cup, 2011 preseason, these teams got in basically a brawl in Tucson, Arizona. They ended the game, stopped the game, and it's been this way ever since. One of those rivalries that's not really based on like fans or geography. It's based on some bad blood on the field. I personally am excited about it. What are you looking at, Dave? On the field, is there anything that's going to get you going here?
First of all, I'm going to have to miss the game.
Are you?
Which is unfortunate.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Oh,
I have another
wrong?
Broadway show ticket.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Pre-assigned to go to 1776. Yeah, uh-huh. But in terms of on the field, it's tough. So you have Kyle Beckerman, Hamison Olave, and Burrito all suspended. Matt Beisler out with injury. Justin Mapp out with injury. Nagamura out with injury.
But
Espinoza
maybe
suspended.
But maybe Benny Feilhaber back.
Right.
And
so
Feilhaber is the one who said last year, dislike, hate. Right. He does not like
RSL. So I think the game is Joao Plata with 10 youth players against Benny Feilhaber with 10 youth players. And whoever can win. I think this actually makes it fun. I think it makes it an open game. I think you're going to see a lot of goals, which you don't always see in these games. You see quality goals, not always a high amount, so I think it makes it a fun game.
Doyle?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think it's unlikely to be a high-scoring game because when teams miss that many guys, they tend to go in a shell a little bit. So I would expect it to be a little bit cagey. You know, I expect Feilhaber to be a little bit rusty. I'm not sure what RSL is going to do. I mean, I thought Jordan Allen was pretty good as a playmaker, so it'll be fun to watch that in particular. But to me, with all the absences on both sides, a little bit of the urgency is taken out of it.
Yeah, it's tough. My guy, the Hungarian Hammer,
yeah,
got a goal.
I threw that Swope in the rundown
Rangers.
Just
yeah,
for you.
Uh-huh. He's coming.
A weekly Swope Park Rangers update here on Extra Time
Saloy,
Radio.
Saloy. Crew SC at FC Dallas. This is a great game. This is a not a rematch necessarily of MLS Cup, but two teams. One team that got there, one team that almost got there. Yeah. So it could have been MLS Cup, 9 p.m.
I think
Eastern.
This is a preview for a lot of people of their picks. Seriously.
Yeah, no, it is. I think I might have made this pick for
MLS
Cup.
Yeah, don't we. Why are we?
Me.
You
I did
with
it. Yeah, just me. 9 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live. A brutal road stretch for Crew SC is just rolling on. They got Montreal next. Of course, Montreal just lost to FC Dallas. I want to talk about Tony Chani, though.
Yeah.
Because he's cap-tied for Cameroon now. We know he's a good player in MLS. We like that number 8 there. He got that call-up for the U.S. earlier this year. Apparently decided that his path to international either stardom or just productivity was with Cameroon. Cameroon. Doyle, is this a big loss for the U.S.? Is it a big gain for Cameroon?
No, I don't think it's a huge loss for the U.S., but I definitely think he could have been a guy sort of in and around the edges of the pool who gives you a couple of good minutes here and there, maybe spelling Michael Bradley a little bit. And it's already proved to be a big pickup for Cameroon. Chani drew the foul that led to their second goal, the game-tying goal against South Africa over the weekend. So, you know, we see this all the time. And under Jurgen Klinsmann, most of the dual nationals have chosen the U.S. Chani went the other way. I have no ill will toward him at all. I wish him the best of luck. In fact, I'll enjoy rooting for another American on another national team.
The only thing that I would say is, didn't that Cameroon-South Africa game have, like, the most unreal midfield goal shot ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that game.
It was something special.
That thing was on purpose. Chani's a good player. I really like him. I really like watching him in MLS. That position is just so loaded.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, we said, obviously, get down in Guatemala. There was no one playing in the holding midfield. There is needs. There are positional needs in there. But when you just look at the sheer number of players that you're going to go up and compete against, when you look at the Olympic team, I mean, the Olympic team put out 4 holding mids.
Yeah.
And Kellen Acosta had to play at fullback, which he is not.
We've talked about that, yeah.
So there's, I think it's just, it's a tough position for Chani to look at it and say, I'm going to break through the next 9 guys. A position that the U.S. keeps building players at.
And special to play for Cameroon in the country of his birth. I mean, this is not a mystery why he would want to do that. He said he had to talk to his mom about it. Maybe his mom weighed in. Either way, a promising career going forward for him. FC Dallas, we'll see what they can do at home. They've been almost unbeatable over their last 11 at home. 10 wins, I think, plus double-digit goal differential.
It was 28-7 goal differential.
That's decent, yeah. Plus 21. Yeah, that's all right. we'll count that. We'll count that. 10 p.m., I mean, you're just rolling through on MLS Live right now if you got nothing to do on Saturday night. That's me a lotot of the time.
I wish it was me.
Yeah, no, you don't. Get out
I
of here.
I do. These are great
This is
games.
A great one. Montreal
this is
at
a great
Seattle.
Weekend.
Woo! Woo! There's not going to be Drogba in this one because of the turf. Remember, he's hanging out. That Dallas
so
game was the one he jumped into.
Can I just say something? I know I wasn't here, so I probably don't get to say this.
Mm-hmm.
But when Drogba came in versus FC Dallas, the
yeah,
Montreal
the
team
stadium.
Fell apart.
Oh, no.
They were terrible. Did you guys talk about this?
We hadn't. No, you
okay.
just bring in the heat.
Every pass from the moment he came in to the moment the game was over went to him. They were playing fine. They knocked the ball around, and all of a sudden, everything had to be across straight to Drogba. He dropped deep. You had to play the ball to his feet. It felt like everyone on that team felt like if they didn't pass it to Drogba, they were making a mistake. And a team that had been the best team in MLS
yeah,
the first 3 weeks.
That's not good.
All of a sudden, and I felt like you would see that at times with the Red Bulls with Henry, where guys felt like
yeah.
if he called
there
for it,
there was
they
a responsibility.
Yeah.
yeah.
So I think that's something. It's not an issue. There's no issue getting Didier Drogba back. I think once he gets into the flow a few games, because he's not even training with them, mm-hmm. it'll be better. But it was something that was you could clearly tell in that game.
Well, we'll see if they revert.
Yeah, but
here.
To be clear, he's not going to play in this game.
Right.
So thank you for the digression.
Yes, yes. yes. I actually enjoyed the digression, actually. the guy who probably or could play here is Hercules Gomez. He signed with Seattle. Matt, what's his role here? How does he change this team? Does he change this team?
I don't think he does appreciably. I think he's, you know, a backup target forward, and maybe he'll get a little bit of time on the wings because he's played there some over his career as well. I think probably it's more mentality than anything else. Herc is tough, and he's a gamer. And it looks to me like Seattle have been missing that a little bit, and they need it. So to me, it's a good signing, but the Sounders probably need a little bit more help than that in the coming weeks if they're going to climb up the standings in the West.
But they needed bench help, and that was one of the things we said during CCL.
Yeah.
When they looked at their bench offensively, it was yeah. Darwin Jones and Aaron Kovar. And so that's where he'll help. And we know there'll be injuries in internationals and whatever along the way, but they need someone in the 70th, 75th minute that can – in any way, like he said, psychologically, lift their spirits.
You
like,
know,
okay, look, we're down a goal. We have a shot at getting
and
Herc, this back.
Herc will believe. Herc yeah. will, that will translate to the whole team. Remember, Seattle hasn't won a game. They haven't drawn a game. They have 3 losses. Pressure is certainly mounting in the Pacific Northwest.
It's
just want to remind you
basically every question we got on Twitter.
Yeah, it really is. Everybody is they're riled up right now. They need a win. They need a win bad. This one's at home. I will remind you, though, 2014, LA Galaxy, they won first of their two of their first 8. They won MLS Cup. So you never know, but you got to start collecting wins. You got to start collecting points quickly here. LA Galaxy at Vancouver. Speaking of the Galaxy, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS
Another
Live.
Another good matchup.
MLS Live, MLS Live, MLS Live. You know what I'd like to see?
What?
People's best like triple, double, quad boxing setups for MLS on these nights. Because we're blessed. I come into this office. I have 6 TVs in front of me. I can watch it all, and I'm just jumping around. I'm waiting to see who screams out next. But I'd love to hear what you guys have as far as your setups for watching this stuff at home. Vancouver expanded their capacity a little one. Remember at BC Place, they just had like 50-something thousand people for Canada-Mexico. That ought to be fun for them. Kudo was suspended for a dive. That's actually kind of surprising.
Ziggy Schmidt, I think, said it would happen, and
but
then it happened.
Yeah, but I like it here. Where's the hierarchy here, Matt? Which side is higher on the ladder? Because Vancouver, I think, believes with this young squad that they can be one of the top 2 teams in the West. LA is still figuring it out. I have no idea what LA's deal is.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver have not been good attacking wise, though their diving form has been very good so far. But you know they're good defensively. You know, this is, I think, one of the league's best teams defensively, especially since Fraser Aird kind of got the yips out in that first week, and he's been good since then.
Got the Piatti's out, you mean?
What's that?
He got the Piatti's out. There's no, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly. Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit more confidence in Vancouver at this point. Like you said with LA, I just don't know. They just have so much to figure out, especially because they're, you know, their DPs are in and out of the lineup other than Robbie Keane, and it's tough to make a team that fits together if they don't ever play together.
Yeah, Keane had some injury troubles this weekend as well, didn't he, with Ireland. That's not good news for MLS DPs.
LA hasn't
Irish.
Said anything. There was an article that came out, and I don't know who was quoting who, that Martin O'Neill said that even if Keane isn't healthy by Euros, he'll still have a role. As if the injury would last for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah,
I don't know what that was.
We will look into that, and we'll see what's going down as well. A really interesting one to finish the night, and it's got kind of a historical note on it. Not a kind of. It definitely does. DC is going to San Jose. They'll play at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, as they do out on the West Coast, MLS Live once again. But this is the replay, almost a year to the day, or 20 years to the day, I should say, of the first ever MLS match on April 6th, 1996. The Clash, Then the Clash hosted DC United and won 1-0 on an Eric Winalda goal. That was the first ever MLS game. Really incredible stuff. And San Jose is going all out for this one. They're going to have Clash gear available. They're going to recreate some of that pregame ceremony, do all that stuff. Check out the San Jose website. They've got a bunch of really, really cool content. Also, just so you know, April 6th of this year, 2016, we are going to have we're going to live stream that game on MLSsoccer.com. To the minute, exactly how it happened 20 years later. We'll also have a really cool oral history that we've put together on that Wednesday as well. So look out for all this stuff. It's going to be a really interesting game. Make sure you watch that one. Before we get out of here, though, I want to finish us with Portland at Orlando, 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1 on Sunday. Just the single Sunday game here. And Doyle, Tommy Redding, he's getting some of us excited.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he's going to be this year's Matt Miazga in terms of a young guy who was kind of on the radar, but nobody expected him to really break out and lock down a starting spot. But I think it's his already. I think he's been the best defender, full stop, for Orlando City. And, you know, he's been okay for the U-20s. I think that that group has a little stuff to sort of figure out, but it does look like we're starting to get a little bit spoiled for depth in terms of young American central defenders. Redding joining guys like Eric Palma Brown, Justin Glad, Cameron Carter-Vickers. That's all one U-20 group for the U.S.
That is good news for U.S. fans. To be sure, I'm hearing there's a lot of buzz down there in Florida for this one. The Portland Timbers, of course, MLS Cup champions. We'll see how many fans they pack in there. It should be a fun one. Make sure you tune in this week and all the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. And always on Saturday, MLS Live, if you want to watch the matches. What do you got?
Is this going to be the debut of the Beast? Do we know what's the timetable on Julio
Baptista?
Ooh,
yeah, I'm not sure. I know he's getting into the swing of things.
Do you guys expect anything from him?
I expect him to be the physically most imposing player on the field every time he steps on it.
Yes.
And that might be the extent of what I expect.
I have no idea what to expect. I haven't seen him in years. It's been a long time. You know, there were times when he's at Romo, I was like, whoa, this guy is unstoppable. But he's always kind of faded in and out, it felt like.
He's one of those guys who, in his moment, you were like, this guy could start for Barca and be the best player in the world. And those moments were like 6 times a season.
Yep. Well, we'll see if Orlando gets some of those moments here starting out on Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1. As I said, let's go to the mailbag. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Con los hermanos, mi amigo. Hola. As well as Matt, the armchair analyst. That was kind of off the cuff, but I liked it. Maybe I'll start throwing that in every now and then.
You're just going to quiz me twice?
We're into the mailbag where I believe, Matt, you have some news to break, but you got an interesting story here.
Tommy McNamara has been approached by the Republic of Ireland, which I put out on Twitter this past weekend. There's some preliminary interest. They want to know if he has a passport. He does. They seem to want to know if he's interested in playing for Republic of Ireland, which he said he is open to. We have a story on it right now on MLSsoccer.com, so make sure you check that out. I think it would be kind of a loss for the U.S. if Tommy's never part of the system.
What type of a hero would he be?
I like it. Go, Tommy.
Yeah.
Go, man.
Like,
go.
For the Irish national team, he comes in with the hair, the American accent.
Yeah.
Clearly the style and the swagger.
The glazos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just imagine all of a sudden he just comes off the plane and saves the country of Ireland in one fell swoop. What a hero he would be.
No more potato famines for you.
He could go into the book transatlantic as the next.
I really like it. I want to see him play some international soccer. That would be a lot of fun. Let's also jump into our best mail here. What's the one we got here?
Yeah,
really
Gabriel
like?
Munoz. I like his email. He says, I'm glad U.S. men's national team took care of business, but there's one glaring deficiency, and it's the back line and it's fullbacks. I'm tired of watching center backs play out of position. he said, you know, Yedlin, like I agree, played looked a little bit more solid than he has in other games. So he said pick five fullbacks, which you'd like to see called in. That hasn't had the chance yet. Can't wait to hear the results. Five might be excessive, but do you want me to give you the five he gave?
Yeah, I want to hear his five.
So his five, one through five in order, Brandon Tierney.
Brandon Tierney.
Yeah, I don't know where that just came from. I said it and I looked at you and I was like, Brandon Tierney?
Just terror in your eyes.
Jorge Viafania, Robbie Rogers, Donnie Toya, and Jordan Allen.
I like for sure. I think Tierney is one guy who, you know, he's never really got a look, and I'm not sure that he would ever stick at the international level, but I want to see him at some point, like in a January, you'd think. Viafania, I think, is a guy that probably should be there. Doyle, you got any thoughts on those guys? Anybody who'd jump in there?
No, I agree with your take on those two left backs. I think Robbie Rogers is probably a left back, and you know he could play a little bit at the international level, but I, you know, for whatever reason, Jurgen doesn't rate him. I like Donnie Toya because he is a very, very good 1v1 defender in space. He's not going to overlap a ton, but he could fill a specific role. Jordan Allen, get him out of there. He is a midfielder now for RSL. I like Keegan Rosenberry. I like Brandon Vincent. But the problem is those two guys, they're 22, 23 years old, and we're just talking about them making their first steps into a pro environment. That's what U.S. soccer has to fix in the next 5 years.
Yeah, there are definitely some issues there. Hit us with your fullback picks. Let us know what you think of those lists. Anybody you want to see with the U.S., we want to know about it. That's it for us. We will see you on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.